thecooperageproject.org. And from listeners like you.
Hello, 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 and welcome to the Local Edition, news and information to keep you connected in the Catskills and Northeast Pennsylvania. I'm your host for this Friday, Patricio Robayo. It's Friday, we made it, let's take a deep breath. There we go. Let's start our Friday right. Thank you for spending your Friday evening with me. Happy St. Patrick's Day, if you celebrate. I hope you're doing well and safe and staying warm. In the second half of the show, we have an interview done by Valerie Manzi. She interviews Allison Mallett, who has an exhibition at the DVAA Loft Gallery in Narrowsburg through March 26th. And there's an artist talk happening on March 18th with the Outside Institute. So Valerie has all that information for you. But first, it's Friday on the Local Edition. And every other Friday, we check in with the one and only Chris Rowley from the Schwanker Journal to see what's happening in Ellenville and Ulster County. Chris, welcome back to the show. The big story I see on the pages of the Schwanker Journal, some lot of FBI activity at Ulster Heights. What has happened?
This began a couple of weeks ago. February 22nd, so more than a couple of weeks now. But rumors began to swirl, and we were hearing all kinds of things at the Shangum Journal office about body parts being recovered from the woods along a stretch of Ulster Heights Road. I should mention that that's a very beautiful part of Ulster Heights, nice houses along the road and some woods along the what we call the southern, the southwestern side of it. Well, it turned out to be quite amazing, actually, despite the rumors that it was a dumping ground for mafia bodies, or that somebody had been shot in the head, or all this stuff. It turned out to be even more strange. The FBI was the law enforcement agency involved on the case, and they were looking for a guy who had been disappeared. We don't have his name, but he had been disappeared in a deal gone bad over, I think, stolen high-end watches. And he owed $500,000 to somebody who has been named in an FBI document as Shlomo Pachyav, along with unnamed co-conspirators. Now, our editor, Lisa Ryder, she wrote this up and did a great job in catching all the sort of elements that make a story like this fascinating. You know, that first of all, you have a row of cars show up and park along Ulster Heights Road, with tinted windows, they're unmarked vehicles, and, you know, there are gentlemen moving into the woods and returning with bags, I assume, parts of the unfortunate victim. Anyway, it turns out that this poor chap in June last year had met with Pachyev and an associate to discuss the sale of these watches. More than that about the watches, we don't know yet. They may well have been stolen or diverted from some dealer. We just don't know. But anyway, but on the morning of June 25th, the victim, an apartment building, holding a black shopping bag, never to be seen alive again. And the victim was supposed to give a down payment, I guess, on the $500,000. The victim reportedly transferred ownership of a Mercedes on the same date to Pachyab's. Later that same day, the unnamed co-conspirator visited a car dealership in Pennsylvania and bought a Chevy Malibu for $2,500 in cash. And then a little bit later, June 26th, the Malibu was towed, picked up by a tow truck and towed up to, towed from Brooklyn up to Ellenville and put by this address on Ulster Heights Road. Well, anyway, so then Patchy Evan Associate came up here, went up to the where the Malibu was parked, and tools from the truck, and used a garden hose to clean the tools and the exterior of the Malibu. Right. On June 28th, the unnamed associate was questioned at JFK Airport while attempting to board an international air flight to the Republic of Georgia. And according to court documents, the man admitted to knowing the victim and that the victim owed him money for the watches. So this was basically what happened. And it shows you what goes on in FBI investigations. Almost certainly somebody snitched on this guy and Mr. Pachyev. They got snitched on. And that's how the FBI knew what was going on. Maybe the FBI was following these watches all along. You know, I mean, often that seems to be the story with these kind of things, that, you know, criminals are busy doing their evil deeds while being watched all the way. But anyway, whatever that happens. Anyway, on February 21st, agents looking in the woods behind the address where the Malibu had been found, found human remains in the woods and recovered them, and they were taken away. And there's apparently test results showing that a strong level of support for the DNA recovered in the tools original from the victim. So that would seem to be the answer to that story. It was one person, not multiple mafia corpses. You know, and it wasn't from long ago. It was from right now. And it was the FBI who were doing the investigating. And the body parts, you know, I don't know if they've been recovered or not, but they may have been. Anyway, the dark-colored duffel-style body bags that were found with the body parts in them had been bought by the conspirators, you know, around that date in June. So, you know, that would seem to be a, you know, open and shut case, and it'll stop.
Yeah.
No one is concerned about the SETI law. But, you know, it just extraordinary how complex sometimes something like that can be.
It's amazing that something like this happened in an area like that, like Ulster Heights. It's, you know, this is something you normally see on TV or like on a true crime podcast, but it's in our listening area.
Yeah, it's a beautiful little stretch of Ulster Heights Road, but, you know, and I'm sure that the neighborhood doesn't care to be identified this way. But, you know, everyone's got nice little homes and big homes there, very, very rural. And gorgeous, but this was kind of a bit of a shock, I think, to everybody. You know, and once again, it's that thing. The rumor mill goes mad when there's something like this. You know, I mean, just off the charts. And then, you know, the reality comes in, and usually, I mean, because like, you know, local newspaper, we hear rumors all the time, and usually they don't pan out to be anything. You know, the creature in the backyard turns out to be a cat from three doors up. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah. That kind of thing. But this time, the reality is even stranger than you might expect. You know, it's this kind of deal for watches, not drugs, right? not stolen, you know, money or jewels or that, just these watches, high-end watches, and they can be pricey. You know, and this guy who was trying to flee to Georgia gets nabbed at the airport, classic style. You know, I mean, that's,
yes,
we've shot in so many shows on TV, you know. That's that case. That was a very interesting one. He did that. Then she did that. That was Lisa Ryder. I did my big story of the week that I think we should talk about is, I'm sorry to bore you all, but New York has a housing crisis. There are simply not enough houses being built to make houses affordable or even available. You know, and that means rents are rising. Rents outside New York City, which is a sort of this is a very general thing, but they've gone up by about 50% since 2015. And there just aren't enough houses and not enough apartments being built. And so Governor Hochul has heard this, and she's basically demanding that 800,000 new dwellings, can be apartments, can be houses, be built in the next, you know, few years. And she's requiring Now, this is the difference thing. This New York Housing Compact will require all cities, towns, and villages in the state to hit targets on a 3-year cycle. All upstate municipalities will be required to have 1% of new housing built and in place over 3 years. Now, already, you know, we see some of our towns and pushing back, saying this is just not realistic. I think Tony Crawford was one of the first to come out saying, nope, that can't be done. Is this realistic? Well, there are two problems which are intertwined. The cost of building, that's very important. And the other one is, NIMBY, not in my backyard. And this basically puts two big things into conflict. Our social needs, our economic needs for new affordable housing run into this wall built by our quite understandable, our need to protect our property values and keep others out of our neighborhoods because we like them the way they are.
Unfortunately, when you say the others, that what comes across is black and brown people. I mean, when neighborhood changes, that's exactly what they mean. It's predominantly white neighborhood, and now other people who don't look like us are coming into the neighborhood, and we don't want that.
There is that element. Yeah, that is a tragic thing, and that element. You know, and as far as we know, that goes back as well. You know, I mean, probably they had complaints in neighborhoods in Babylon, you know. Oh, my God, they've got Greeks coming in here. You know, I mean, you know what I mean? I mean, it's like it's an ancient human thing. We have to get over it. The United States is a land of diversity. We have a very diverse population. We've got to get along with each other and accept that, you know, everybody's a human being. Everybody has their story, their background, their family, and until you know worse, you've got to assume better about everybody. So I hope and pray that generation by generation we do see that the racial animus thing is fading. It's going away as people, younger people, are more accustomed to being around other people of various skin colors, ethnic origins, Asians, Africans, everything, we'll get there, I think. It may be difficult for a decade or two, but I think we will all get there. But in this housing thing, the other thing is the cost of building anything. Just doing my basic research in real estate, all the rest of it, building materials have gone up anywhere between 20 to 50% since the pandemic began.
Wow.
Some things went up like wood and then came down again because, the Canadians, cut a million more trees. But, it's an issue because of the demand. There's a demand for materials, but the supply chains got messed up. A lot of people found that they weren't selling stuff. So they went out of business or they stopped that line. Anyway, one reason or another, it's much more expensive. Plus, there isn't a lot of good, nice, easy land to develop. What I see in planning boards these days tends to be a parcel pulled together from several other parcels. Maybe it's bisected by a road. Or three roads. It has wetlands over there. It's got some steep slopes on this side, which make the whole business of getting a driveway in very difficult. It's a struggle with the zoning to carve out, say 10 lots at 5 acres or 3 acres, whichever the zoning is in the municipality. And so there's a ton of engineering and surveying that goes into it, makes it all very expensive right away. And then you're dealing with the planning board and they're looking at this thing and they're wondering, because remember, planning boards have a responsibility. They have to create lots or allow lots to be created that can be sold 10, 20, 30 or 50 years from now without being covered in awful complexities that make them impossible to sell. So that's what they try to do. So they're trying to fit the zoning and that sort of future concept to complicated lots, and all the rest of it.
Housing is definitely a huge need in our area, and it's a continuing struggle that we're going to have in our area for a long time. And I'm glad that we have so many reporters on Local Dish and on Radio Chatskill to cover this important issue that we're having here in our listening area. Chris, as always, thank you so much for joining us on the Local Edition, and we'll talk to you again in 2 weeks. Stay tuned. We'll be right back. We get to talk to Allison Mallett, an interview by Valerie Manzi. We'll be right back. Stay tuned.
I'm at my love by the gasworks wall. Dream the dream the old canal. I kiss my girl by the factory wall. Dirty old town, dirty old town. Clouds are drifting across the moon.
You're listening to The Local Edition, winner of 2 Excellence in Broadcasting Awards from the New York State Broadcasters Association. Radio Catskill. Listen local.
This is Ari Shapiro with NPR. If you've been thinking about helping this station with a contribution, but now is not the right time for a financial gift, you can donate a vehicle you don't need. Pickup is free, and it could be worth hundreds of dollars in support. Think about it. And thanks.
We accept any vehicle, running or not, including cars, trucks, boats, RVs, motorcycles, and more. Donate at wjffradio.org.
I'm Kai Wright. This week on Notes from America, Republican state lawmakers are introducing a rapidly growing number of bills targeting transgender people. What's behind this movement? Maybe political opportunism, but on this week's show, I talk with a trans journalist who's asking, what if it is actually a strategy to erase trans people? Join me and join the conversation. Sunday evening at 6, live on Radio Catskill.
Welcome back to The Local Edition. News and information to keep you connected in the Catskills and Northeast Pennsylvania. I'm your host for this Friday, Patricio Roballo. Allison Mallett has a show coming up called Abundance. This is an exhibit that's happening at the DVAA's Loft Gallery in Narrowsburg. The show is on from now until March 26th. She's having an artist conversation Saturday, March 18th, from 10:30 to 12:30. And this is in collaboration with the Outside Institute. Here's Valerie and Allison.
Welcome, Allison. It's so nice to have you.
Thank you so much. I'm so happy to be here.
Good. Allison, you named your exhibit Abundance and described the works in the exhibit as teetering on the edge of botanical observation. Can you elaborate on that for us, please?
Yes. So I've been living in Sullivan County on and off since 2016 and have really gained a massive appreciation for nature while living there outside of the city. And I've always been a painter, but I found that I was so much more drawn to the local flora and fauna and moved away from portraiture, which I had done previously. And I really wanted to observe what was growing in my garden and the interesting things that I didn't even know what they were often, or sort of this battle between plant and insect. Or plant and animal. And I certainly am not a scientist, and I love watercolor as a medium. I teach watercolor as a medium. So I wanted to very much embrace that, what watercolor can do, and my interest is not to specifically do, you know, scientific botanical renderings, but to celebrate these various species accurately while also supporting the paint medium that I'm working with and letting it occasionally bleed or be painterly. So that's very much what I'm looking at. And the term abundance was certainly that there is just, there's so much of everything, the good and the not so good. And, you know, I feel like I was going out to my garden daily trying to get rid of the Japanese beetles. There were just so many of them, but, you know, and then I'd get tomato plants where I hadn't planted them and it's both exciting and, a chore, you know, it's a balance. Absolutely. And trying to also place myself in the middle of all that and where my role is and what's appropriate for me, which I don't entirely know. I'm evolving as I do this.
I observed that you chose to frame your watercolors of these beautiful plants and more with white frames on a white background and on paper that was made almost three-dimensional. Was that a conscious choice in the way you presented?
Yes, very much. Again, I've been working for a long time, and this subject matter is a little bit newer to me. But I was always interested, whether I was working on a portrait of a human or of an animal or of a plant or of an insect, that it could be that it's in this really neutral space where the animal could just walk off the page into the gallery. So that's always been just. Yeah, very much the goal was to place the thing in a neutral space so that it could grow into that space. I remember a long time ago in my studio in Brooklyn, I remember coming back after a long rainstorm and finding mushrooms growing out of the corner. And I mean, it was disgusting at the time, but at the same time, it was sort of fascinating how, you know, life finds where it should be. And I think that the object in this blank space, this white space, this emptiness, and then framed also to be in this emptiness on ideally a white wall, it just allows it to exist in that space without it being contained. There's a piece called The Lumberjacks, and it's a yes. larger painting. It's about 3 feet by 3 feet, and it's the only one that's figurative. So there's these two men that are up in a tree, and they're cutting down a limb, and the foliage of the tree is completely empty. So, and, you know, for many years, people said, is it finished? Because you see the branches, and you see the sky, and you see the figures and the chainsaw, but you don't see the green of the foliage. And what's interesting, of course, is that one of the men is sitting on the limb that is going to be cut down. And we all know what will happen then to one or both of the lumberjacks. And as he falls, he will fall through more nothingness and keep going and going and going because there's nothing there to catch him.
I remember that one. I also remember the bee, that charming little bee that you must have had to use a very, very, very tiny paintbrush to do.
Yes, that is the. I knew I wanted to include a bee because they're so important to our society and always in danger of being endangered. And the common mullein, AKA cowboy toilet paper, is a weed that grows a lot on the sides of the roads. And they're sort of extraordinary because they grow to be as tall as sunflowers, but sunflowers are like this amazing, enormous flower at the very top of the, you know, the growth, and the common mullein, most of the action seems to happen at the bottom of the plant. near the ground, but they're still so extraordinary. They can be like 6 feet tall, but they are quite long and skinny. And I really wanted the paper to, I really do try to play with this negative space. And I loved that plant, and it was just so alone on that piece of paper. And I felt that the bumblebee was a wonderful pollinator to place with that and fill some of that negative space, even though it's such a small, like, it's life size. Almost everything in the show is life size. So yeah, that was a double or triple zero brush, very, very tiny brush. And I'm really happy I put it in.
Oh, me too. I think a number of folks at the exhibit felt the same way about that bee. Moving on to the talk at DVAA, tell us a little bit about that and what's going to be happening.
Yeah, so we will be, it's March 18th. We will start at 10:30 sharp. There's only a few spots left, so you would want to go to the Delaware Valley Arts Alliance webpage to sign up or give them a call. You'd want to sign up for the artist for the walk. Actually, at 11:30 is the artist talk, and that's unlimited to anyone who would like to come. So if walking is not your thing, or if we've run out of spots, you can absolutely come at 11:30 to hear me talk. But what we're starting up with the Outside Institute is that Laura Silverman will be guiding a walk in Narrowsburg. I don't know exactly where we're going yet, but we're going to take a stroll, look through some of the nature. The hope is that she will point out some interesting things that we could forage, and I may gather something from the walk, bring it back to the gallery, and then at 11:30, I will do an artist talk, question and answer, and then most importantly, I'll be doing about a 30-minute watercolor demonstration, ideally from something that we find on the walk. So I may not finish the painting, but the goal is just to let people in on my process and understanding some of the watercolor techniques that are really prevalent in my work.
So, Allison, if you could give the listeners your website so they can see the breadth of your work. Your work extends in a lot of different directions.
Thank you. Yes. So my website is just my name. It's Allison, A-L-L-I-S-O-N, Mallets, M-A-L-E-T-Z. And then my Instagram is the same. It's just my name, Allison Mallets, and it's quite up to date with work in the show and lots of painting demonstrations and drawing demonstrations. So
you're a busy lady.
Yes, I am. Lots of teaching on the side. So.
Yes.
Lots of painting every day.
And thank you again.
Thank you so much, Valerie. I'm so happy to be here.
And that does it for The Local Edition. Thank you so much, Valerie, for that interview. Thank you to my first guest, Chris Raleigh from the Schwanquick Journal. We'll be back on Monday talking to Sullivan County government about the child support debit card. Then we'll be checking in with the Sullivan County Democrat newspaper. If you ever miss a show, we have a podcast. You can find us anywhere you find your favorite podcast. Google, Apple, Stitcher. Search for WJFF The Local Edition. Subscribe, share it, and tell your friends. Find us on social media. We're WJFF Radio Catskill. We're on Facebook and Instagram. Visit our website, wjffradio.org/The Local Edition. You've been listening to The Local Edition. I've been your host, Patricio Rabayo. Have a good night, Lucy. This is Radio Catskill, your NPR station. And coming up for you tonight is The Mixtape.
Support for Radio Catskill comes from Bethel Woods Center for the Arts, presenting Dierks Bentley, Friday, July 28th. Tickets on sale now. More information at bethelwoodcenter.org. From The River Reporter, serving communities in New York and Pennsylvania, riverreporter.com. and from listeners like you who donate at wjffradio.org. WJFF Jeffersonville, W233AH Monticello. Radio Catskill, your NPR station for the Catskills in Northeast Pennsylvania.